your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, shifting our focus over to the energy sector, more specifically oil and natural gas, as we're chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes that Eye on Energy Report, which is now on Substack. I recommend checking out both of those reports, one being a little bit more focused on underlying equities, the other being big picture, what's going on in the energy sectors, as well as some of the ETFs that follow those equities. Joseph, one topic that I want to start off with here is North American production, comparing rig counts that I believe have been falling pretty much all year, and overall North American production, which hasn't really been moving in lockstep with those falling rig counts. I want to start here because we get so many comments on the current price of oil. U.S. producers, at least new wells, don't make money at these prices. Trump wants to drill, baby, drill, but we're not seeing companies drill, baby, drill. But then we're also not seeing production fall off the table. So bring us up to speed on what you're seeing in the data, please.
Yeah, let's start with the rig count. The rig counts are down because the industry doesn't need to drill as many wells because they're drilling longer reach wells. They're doing multi-leg wells. They're doing pad drilling. So once the rig gets on the pad, it could have, you know, four wells on a pad, five wells in a pad, sometimes even as high as 8 or 10 in a number of basins. So the rig count yet last week for the U.S. was 539 rigs working, down 8 on the week. And a year ago was 585, so it's down by 7.9%. On the breakdown between gas and oil, the gas rig count, surprisingly, is up 6.9%. It's 108 versus 101. And I think that's really because of more LNG plants coming on in the U.S. And so the gas has to be hooked up, you know, that's contracted to go into those LNG facilities. The oil is down 7 to 425 from 479, down 11.2%. And that reflects the lower oil price, offset by the fact that the pad drilling is keeping production up. And I can go through that. The EIA data from last week, Friday, we'll get another report tomorrow. It's up 233,000 for crude oil to 13.43 million barrels a day. And that was 13.2 a year ago. You add in the 9.6 million of natural gas liquids and renewables, and you get the total number of volume in the United States of 23.0 million. And the demand last week was 20.5 million. So the U.S. is clearly self-sufficient. And its net exports, or its exports last week, were 2.3 million barrels. So it's shipping the light oil from the Gulf of Mexico, from the Permian and the Eagle Ford. It can't be refined in the U.S. refineries on the Gulf Coast. So they're shipping that to buyers who have less sophisticated refineries, and they're using more heavy crude. And they're, of course, using a lot from Canada. Canada, you know, provides them probably half of their imports, about 4-something million barrels. And a lot of that goes to the Midwest and the Gulf Coast refineries. Also, right now, the Canadian numbers have been growing because the exports are now going also to the West Coast. The TMX pipeline is almost going to be full in within 6 months to a year. And they're now talking, as you may have seen in the media, where there's talk of support for another oil pipeline from Alberta to the West Coast of Canada.
Well, Joseph, just in listening to you talk and a little bit of our conversation off mic, it seems like in general, the industry is actually a lot more efficient than it used to be. Like you're saying, you know, drilling multiple wells off of one pad, the ability to drill those longer holes, some of those holes going down 2 to 5 miles now, or horizontal holes, and just getting more life out of a basin. But the other thing that we hear a lot of is companies with their completions doing water floods and polymer floods to squeeze a little more juice out of the area. Do you think that, as a general statement, the industry has gotten a lot more efficient than it was in the past, and so it doesn't need to drill, baby, drill anymore to the same degree?
Yeah, I think let's break it down between the shale plays and conventional plays. On the shale plays, these multi-leg wells, be it in Canada, the Montney and the Duvernay, in the States being the Permian or the Eagle Ford or any of the other big plays in the U.S. And so it's more the shale plays. And so the fracking technology, the amount of sand they're using, the amount of pressures they're using, the plug and perf or whatever other techniques you're using, all of that helps to get the shale volumes up. And we're looking at the, you know, record production there from the Permian that really increased the numbers, you know, from, you know, the I think U.S. going back, you know, was under 10 million barrels of production in 2009, 2010. And so when you look at the amount of they had in the strategic reserve, they had about 80 days. Today, when you look at the fact that the net imports are only, you know, 4.6 million barrels, then you look at the reserves in the commercial stocks, and you're looking at data that shows you're over 140 days of supply. So we're looking at, you know, an in a situation that's changed there materially. Now let's go to the conventional basins, and this is where you have oil in place, and it, you know, the initial production is flush, comes out, then of course it goes through a normal decline, and then you look at ways that you can use to get a higher recovery factor from 8, 10, 12% to 15, 20. That's where water floods come in. And then you could potentially take it up even higher than 20% with these polymer floods. And I bet you there'll be more technology coming about because the oil is in the rock. It just needs to find a way to come out. And so the, you know, water floods is first, polymer with water is second. And I bet you that over time, we'll find new technologies that can help recover more. And again, a 1% increase in recovery can make a massive difference in production in the U.S. and, of course, in Canada.
What's the cost profile of these new technologies? Is there, let's say, a baseline energy price, oil or natural gas price, that is needed for these technologies to work and be utilized?
You know, some of the companies that are talking active quite regularly about using polymers, a company called Hemisphere, which has, you know, a play in Alberta, which they've done a fabulous job first with water flood, now with polymer. And what they've seen is, of course, flatlining their decline rates. And in fact, because they're adding more wells and more stimulant, they're having increases in their production. And so that's really been a win for Hemisphere. People can just go to their website and look at their presentation, and you can see the production profile. And Don Simmons and his team have done a fabulous job. And of course, it's helped, you know, the stock has done well. They pay a very healthy dividend. So the total return for shareholders has been quite good in 2025.
Well, Joseph, when you look at nat gas, if we get into that a little bit, there is a big difference between U.S. gas prices and Canadian gas prices. Do you see that leveling off some? How do you see the trends in both countries?
Well, the U.S. has got, you know, much better pricing. Today, we're looking at $3.35 for NYMEX, which is, you know, very nice price, you know, but to stimulate the industry to start spending a lot more money to bring on more production, you're going to need $4. But a lot of the natural gas, it's the reason why the price is where it is it's coming from those Permian oil wells as a byproduct. And so there's pipelines now that have been brought on, so that if you want to produce more oil, you can't flare the gas anymore. So that gas is now going by pipeline to the Gulf Coast to be sold. That's keeping the price down. But as more and more of these LNG plants come on, we're going to see a tightening situation. And I think we're going to be moving north of $4 heading into the, you know, early winter. And I think in next year, we'll probably be looking at north of $4 average for the year for NYMEX. Canada's a different story. Canadian prices right now for AECO are under 80 cents an MCF, a really sloppy price. But again, if it's a byproduct of the condensate and the Montney Duvernay, the companies, you know, as long as they get something, they're not worried about it. But to drill a conventional dry gas well does not make sense. The economics are not there. The only way you may want to do it is if you have a plant with a certain capacity, you want to keep the unit costs down. So you'll drill wells to keep the plant running at full capacity, even though the marginal cost of that extra molecule is not as profitable as you'd like. I think that we're heading into, you know, you look at all of next year, because of the LNG Canada working from the first shipment that came out last week and went to South Korea. We're going to probably be looking at 2 BCF by the end of the year. That will tighten the market up. And the forward curve for all of next year is over $3 Canadian. What a lot of companies have done is they've hedged to that AECO price. Others are selling in through the Alliance pipeline into the Midwest, so they're getting NYMEX plus. And others have gone into Dawn, which of course Sarnia area, and they're selling into the Ontario market, and they're getting much better pricing. You know, Birchcliff being one of those getting that. So, you know, there's companies that are stuck only in AECO and Station 2 that are not doing well right now. Others are doing okay. But the key thing is, once we get LNG Canada up and running with 2 BCF and more projects moving forward, and BC seems to be interested in doing that, then I think we're going to see a tightening. And I think we'll be looking at a $3 Canadian price, while the US may be, you know, $4. Then you take into account the exchange rate. That would be a real nice price if we got that in Canada. But we'll probably not get it until we get a couple more. By the end of the decade, we could have 6 to 8 BCF on an 18.5 BCF market. So right now, we're maybe one of that being the LNG plant to train one on. Once train two comes on, that's 2 BCF. You start adding in all the other projects, and all of a sudden, by the end of the decade, we're looking at a very big increase in demand, which means we need higher prices to generate the cash flow and capital to drill up the wells needed to meet those new LNG projects.
Interesting. That could be a big change to the market and huge for the Canadian producers. But Joseph, I feel like every time we talk natural gas, rightfully so, we talk LNG terminals and we usually talk weather. Anything else in the market that investors need to be paying attention to, or you think people are maybe overlooking that could change the whole pricing dynamic, at least maybe as much as the LNG terminals, or to a degree at least?
Well, there's also a lot of demand in Alberta. You know, of course, the more you want to ship, you know, the oil sands and SAGD oil, heavy oil, into pipe, you're going to need more condensate, which means you're going to need to drill more Montney wells, and you're going to also need more natural gas for SAGD. So there is stimulus from there. The chemical refinery operations in the Fort Saskatchewan area are going to use more. Dow Chemical was supposed to be a big stimulus, but it's being delayed. But there's other projects that are coming on that will increase the demand domestically in Alberta. And of course, you know, just bring data centers into it. If we want to have data centers, we're going to have to need to have more power come on. And of course, that power is going to have to come, you know, it'll either come from, you know, small modular reactors, but that's a way down the road and a cost we don't know about. But the easy thing to do would be to bring on more power from natural gas. And again, we're seeing, you know, more of that happening in Alberta, BC, and we'll see it right across Canada over time if you want to have those data centers. So that's going to be a big stimulus to natural gas demand. And Alberta potentially could lead. But the issue is right now, our supply is tightening up. Summertime, of course, air conditioning demand. So if we want to have a lot of data centers, we're going to have to build a lot more. And you're hearing companies talking, you know, Pinecliff is doing a deal to provide natural gas to a power plant, to a data center. And we're probably going to see more bigger companies do one-on-one deals. And so that will be something that will be a positive, but not tomorrow, but down the road.
Yeah, it's a good point on the natural gas demand for electricity and power generation. And we're even seeing a few companies start looking at smaller modular nat gas plants that can be built into a series of plants, or even just powering the electrical needs of the energy companies while they're pulling out the oil, for example, and using the nat gas as a power source. But when you look at the contrarian angle, it seems like the most beat up sector between Canadian oil, U.S. oil, Canadian gas versus U.S. gas are the Canadian gassers. Do you see that as being a contrarian play to be in some of these Canadian nat gas positions now while they're weak before they have that run over the next year? Or would you still favor the U.S. gassers if you were just isolating it to the nat gas companies?
Well, I think the value differential is in favor of Canada for a couple of reasons. One, the reserve life indices are longer. A lot of the areas have not been drilled up, not even, you know, there's still a lot of tier one inventory to drill. You know, we do have Coastal Gas Line in place, so gas will move to the West Coast. There's, of course, you know, we talked about the data center need here. So when you look at the natural gas stocks, some of them have had a very good run. You know, today, you know, for example, Birchcliff is over $7. It was $4.50 at the low in, you know, April time. You go into names like, no, it's $23.50. It was $13 at the low. So there's been a couple of names that have done well. Paramount is $21.70. It was, you know, under $15. So there are names that have done well, but there's quite a few others that are pretty, you know, sluggish right now, where the numbers, you know, because of the low natural gas price and the fact that they're not getting high prices from being in the Alliance into Chicago or into Sarnia, the market and the hedge books were not big enough. Those are the ones that are suffering. And again, we all want to see, you know, some decisions made that are, you know, there's going to be carbon capture facilities, and if we're going to get oil pipelines. And we also need to see government show us that their new bill, where they're talking about fast tracking, you know, is it going to be really fast tracking, you know, like the U.S., where they're saying they want things to happen in, you know, very short order. And the EPA, Secretary of the EPA in the States, his job is to, you know, you cut through the red tape and make things happen. And, you know, he's being seen as a major player in the Trump administration.
I was going to ask you about that Canadian politics angle, though. What do you see happening in Canada in terms of the political angle towards the energy sector?
Well, you know, we don't hear much out of Quebec, but the Premier of Ontario has been here out in Alberta for Stampede and, you know, talking positively to support Daniel Smith and pipelines to Ontario, pipelines to the West Coast. You're hearing from the Premier of Manitoba that he'd like to see pipelines from Winnipeg up to Churchill, and also maybe a pipeline from, you know, Fort Saskatchewan or Fort Mac to Churchill. So there's a lot of potential, you know, new positives there. The stumbling block would be, you know, the Quebec leaders that are, you know, a plethora of the cabinet ministers in the federal government that are anti-energy, anti-Alberta, and, you know, climate demagogues. And I think that's, you know, the question mark is, how does Mark Carney, you know, skate through that when he says he wants to, you know, increase the pie, increase the wealth of Canada, increase the economy of Canada. At the same time, he's got these leftists who want to shut us down, you know, when energy and resources, be it potash, be it uranium, be it, you know, grains, you know, are really the lifeblood of a lot of the provinces, especially in Western Canada.
Yeah, it's an interesting push and pull between political posturing and then the reality of policy actually enabling more growth in the resource extraction industry. So we'll keep tabs on it both in Canada and the U.S. If we shift over to some of the oily or names in the companies, Joseph, you always have some interesting thoughts on how the price moves in the macro with oil will tie into the potential areas to buy the companies. We've had a nice bounce in oil. Some of that was geopolitical related in the last couple of weeks to month, but oil price is still hanging up in the mid. WTI is in the mid to high 60s. Are you expecting a pullback where we can get one of those table pounding buys, or how are you looking at the oily names and the oil price?
Well, when you look at the fact that, you know, the number for last week for the on the commercial stocks was an increase. So we're in the summer driving season when you think you'd see stocks coming down. But the commercial stocks rose 3.8 million barrels to 419 million. So there was an increase last week. And the overall total stocks grew by 9.6 million barrels to 1.64 billion barrels. So we're looking at a build at a time when you should be looking at draws. So I think that as we get more weeks like that, I think we might see right now the last $3-4 to the 69 level is all because of not the war in the Middle East, Iran, like it was before. Now it's the tariff war that people are becoming nervous about. And remember, the markets don't like uncertainty. So we're seeing a bounce there. I think there's still a chance for us to have a peak going down even below 60 again sometime, you know, over the next 2 or 3 months. So I wouldn't be chasing stocks here. I'd be building up your buy list again. And I think we'll get another strong buy, table pounding buy like we got in April. And if you remember, we were saying table pounding buy. We gave you a lot of new names to buy. And, you know, and we thought there was, it was like, you know, kids in a candy store. That's how cheap stocks were. and you had stocks with, good dividend yields. You had some yielding over 10%, some even over 11 and 12. So, and companies with balance sheets that can afford to pay those dividends. So those yields have come down with the big bounce that we've seen in a lot of those stocks. And my guess is that if we get the builds in inventory and, this whole thing with OPEC, that's another issue to talk about, is OPEC's now talking about increasing their capacity by 548,000 BOEs a day in August. They were supposed to have done in May, June, and July 411,000, but all it is really increasing quota for companies, for countries that are cheating. The total growth in the production of OPEC during the month of May was only 183,000, not the 411. I've got the report right in front of me. And the biggest increase came from Saudi Arabia, which raised their production by 177,000 to 9.18 million barrels a day. Others either have production problems because of their facilities, or there is an issue that they were overproducing and they were getting back in line to the quota at the time. So all of this new production that they're saying they're going to bring on may just be quota changes and not real volumes. The only countries that really can bring on real new volumes are Saudi Arabia, maybe 500,000 to 1 million barrels, and maybe a couple hundred thousand from Kuwait and UAE. All the others, will probably have problems, meeting these new quotas that they're getting. And remember, Venezuela is now, under U.S. tougher sanctions starting May 27th. So far, they've been able to sell more to China. But if the U.S. puts more and tighter sanctions on shippers, insurance companies, et cetera, that's going to make the production numbers harder for Venezuela. And if you lose a 500,000 barrels there, that will tighten things up sometime around year-end.
Well, Joseph, on the equity front, since we're not at that table pounding buy yet and you're building up your watch list, do you care to share any of the top companies or just any companies that are on your watch list right now that we should be watching?
Yeah, on the service sector, I'd be looking at CES. The stock's backed off. It's about $7 today. It was in the sixes, and if it gets 6.25, 6.5, I think that'd be a great buy on the service side. I think Pembina Pipeline, which is trading at $50 today, you're looking at a company there with a 5.5% dividend yield. And again, it's come down a lot. Pembina was trading at the high $60.72. So it's $10 off that number, just over $10 off that number. So that's a potential one to keep an eye on. And then I'd be looking at, some of the service sector names, Ensign, Total Energy, and Trican just did that big deal. So the stock popped. If that stock backed off, I'd be interested in it. And then keep an eye on things like, Bonterra, Strathcona, Surge, Valeura. We were talking so many names in early April. Now we don't have them as much. But I bet you that sometime when we have a future conversation, I'll be saying, well, in conservative, I got these five or six names. In growth, I've got these five or six. Entrepreneurial, these five or six. Right now, I would have maybe, one name or two names in each sector. But, the stocks could back off 5-10%. So you've got to keep that in mind and maybe just average in on those names. But Bonterra would be in that group. Marin would be in that group. Pembina would be in that group. So there's a lot of names. Yangara would be in that move, in that group. So, just be patient. And when you get those windows to buy, so in the meantime, if you're getting dividend income off of your Surge and your Topaz and others, just hold that cash. Wait for the windows to open up again. Like Pembina, off $10 from its high. That's a big move for a big stock. And so, if you're an infrastructure buyer with dividend yields, with a great business, Pembina would be my first choice. On the service sector, it would be CES. On the international oils, it'd probably be Marin. On the domestic oils, it would be Bonterra. And on the domestic gas, it would probably be Yangara.
Well, Joseph, just for those listeners that maybe don't play the individual companies, I know you've also been looking at some of the larger ETFs that are more US-based, but have a mix of domestic and international companies. What about something like just looking at the XLE, which is the larger producers, or OIH, which are the service companies?
Yeah, the XLE is today at $88.50. It's up $2.34, up 2.7%. We're having a good day because there's a almost a dollar increase in the price of crude oil, and all the tariff stuff is making the uncertainty there. But the XLE was as low as $74. Now it's 88. If it backed off below 80, I think if we that was where it was in April, I think you'd want to have a buy on that. And then the OIH would fall into, look where it was in April. That's really the kind of thing is get within, 5-10% of that low in April, and that would be a good buy. And if you're fortunate enough that we have a shakeout and a couple of bad days, you may even be able to get prices close to those April lows. And that to me would be a buy signal again. I'm watching the bullish percentage index, and it's pretty high right now. If you look at the CNN fear and greed index, we're at the high end of the greed side. So there's, and the, you look at the 50-day moving average on the S&P 500, it's at the high end. So there's a lot of reasons to be a little more careful now and just to build up cash reserves to be able to be a buyer. I'm not a trader where you can say, go in, go out, and, try to move for 5%. That's not my skill set. But for major buying windows, where you can buy stocks very cheaply and buy them and hold them for multiple years, that's where I think we add value. The last time we were able to say that was in April, and I bet you there'll be another buy signal in the weeks or months to come.
All right, Joseph, thank you very much for joining us on this weekend show. Again, Joseph Schachter, the founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report, and writes the Eye on Energy Report, which is now on Substack. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Boy, oh boy, a lot happening this week, and it just seems like even though we are in summer or close to summer, the news does not slow down, and these markets continue to be quite volatile. Something that gives us a lot to talk about on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis. So please keep tuning in to our website, podcast, and YouTube channel for all our daily editorials and company updates. And as always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email. We love hearing from each and every one of you, and we do our best to get back to you all in a very timely manner. So, Joseph, thanks again for joining us. And everyone, thanks for spending some of your weekend with us. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.